Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Today on Life Quest, I'm talking with Pastor Laura Sumner Truax. She's a senior pastor at LaSalle Street Church in downtown Chicago, a teaching pastor at the University of Chicago. She's an author. And today, I am talking with her about her latest book called Love Let Go, Radical Generosity for the Real World. Welcome to Life Quest, Pastor.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Why did you write this book at this time?
Yeah, well, you know, the big Let Go project, the big generosity project for us was in 2014. And in that moment, the early stages of that, we had all these stories of folks in our church who were doing God's work in the world with their $500 checks.
Yeah.
And over the last year, we've been continuing to give away much of that money to different projects around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of landing and coming to fruition now. And we had some head space and some heart space to collect all these stories, you know, and get it down
right.
for others.
Well, let's begin at the beginning of your book. And you start out with a chapter heading on chapter one I'd like to ask you about. You say we're sure. wired to be givers, and yet we know people, we hear about things on the news, the 80s was the decade of greed. Are we really? How did you come to that conclusion?
Right. Well, you know, all the research on generosity, Dwight, is really clear that we flourish when we're generous. I mean, social science has told us in a whole bunch of different ways that business teams perform better when they're given money and invited to spend that on somebody else. We know that our purpose, our well-being in life, our sense of connectedness with others, even our productivity, and they think even something around our longevity is connected to an open-handed, generous way of living. So, you know, I read some of that work, and it's work from across the board. It's work from both Stanford University and some of their social sciences there, but it's also business management stuff. They're getting on board with this. You read that and you come back to the scriptures and you see repeatedly where Jesus keeps pushing us into, if you want to get your life, then give it away. You know, if you want to find it, you first got to lose it. That repeatedly we hear that generosity begets generosity. And I tell you, for us, we've lived that. We've seen that up front. And you know, you put all that together and you realize, I think we're hardwired. We are literally created as people to be generous. And when we act out of that created mandate, we flourish.
We hear about certain names in the news. Bill Gates comes to mind. And these other, you know, zillionaires who have said we're going to give away 80-90% of all we have. But you're coming down in this project, and I want you to tell us a little bit more of the background of what happened at your church. But it comes down to you and me and whatever we have that generosity is exhibited.
Yeah, that's right. It's not reserved for those who know they have this huge surplus. The generosity really starts with who you are and what you have and where you're at. And so, I'll give you a little bit of background on the story.
Sure.
Back in the mid-70s, LaSalle Street Church was one of five churches on the near north side of Chicago that invested $1,000 in a real estate venture. And it was going to be the first private and public partnership of monies to construct a mixed-income, mixed-race housing development.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of novel in the mid-70s.
Yes.
There were all sorts of restrictions that remained on this property for 35 years. And when those came off, the primary developer who owned 65% of it,
mm-hmm.
The neighborhood had really gentrified. The housing was going through the roof. And they decided to sell the property and take it all up to market rate housing. So at that point, the churches all got what their stake of $1,000 was worth in the next, you know, in this world right now, right, in this evaluation, and every church got $1.6 million.
Wow.
It was a wow moment. It really was. And And so as I've learned of this figure and learned about, you know, gosh, that's a huge number. For us, that was about double what our regular operating budget is. We were looking at a deficit that year in 2014 of $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
We have a ministry building that is always a little short funded, you know, because we
sure.
It's ministry, right?
Yeah.
That's the way it rolls. I'll tell you what, while I was sitting in prayer about this and thinking about it and just lifting it up to the Lord and wondering, you know, what should we do? And a little concerned, because money can get weird really quickly.
Yes.
It can become very divisive very quickly, right?
Mm-hmm.
I felt like the Lord just pressed it on me and said, give it away.
Wow.
And it was pretty counterintuitive, right?
Yes.
Because we had some big needs. And then as I just sat with that for about another week, the next word I perceived was we need to give it to the people. We need to tithe on that money
mm-hmm.
right off the bat by giving it to the people. And that's when I took it to the church board, and that's when life became very real. It's one thing to have all these, you know, expressions of God in your prayer life, right? And then it's another thing to take that into the real world and into real conversations and really be in community with other people.
Yeah.
And we spoke about it and talked about it for several weeks. Actually, it lasted a couple of months at the end of the day.
Mm.
Because there were a lot of good voices around the table. And the book, you know, I try to be unstinting in portraying this moment, that there were some people who thought the most prudent, the most God-honoring fiscal thing we could do would be to pay off our mortgage.
Yeah.
And you know, I heard that. I mean, that's real, you know. There were other people who felt like the most God-honoring thing we could do was to save it for the future and create an endowment so that, you know, we have a cushion. And
mm-hmm.
just lots of good opinions. And it occurs to me, Dwight, that we always think that there's going to be some point in which we're going to feel free of fear. and we're not. That point is an illusion, right?
Yes.
Whatever decision we make, it's always made with fear being part of the conversation.
Yeah.
And this decision was no different. I feel really grateful that after a couple of months of conversation, our church board, we all got to the place where we felt like, yes, the call is to first tithe on it by giving out $500 checks to the 320 people in our congregation.
Hmm.
And then the next step was to discern as a whole community what we were called to do with the rest of the money, what one senior in our church called the big money. And that was a rich thing. And again, it didn't end up with being one person's voice. It ended up with being a lot of people in prayer and discernment and lots of great conversations, robust conversations, you know, that led us to some good decisions, I think.
A great part of this book is how people, what they did with this.
Yeah.
And how it impacted their lives. Now, I wanted to jump ahead because the press began to hear about this.
Yes.
And they began to respond in wonder, if I can use that phrase.
That's it.
And the question that you deal with in the book, and if you just tuned in, folks, the book is called Love, Let Go by Laura Sumner Truex and Amelia Campbell. And, Pastor, why do you think that there was such an interest in this project?
Yeah. Well, first of all, that interest blew me away. It was astonishing to me, the number of calls we got from all over the world. It was crazy. And, you know, Dwight, what I think it was is, frankly, I think they were captivated by the compelling good news. You know, when Jesus walks around telling these stories and people are like amazed
right.
and dazzled at his teaching, I feel like what they were seeing in action was some of those stories. They were seeing the widow's mite, you know?
Yes.
People who hardly had 2 cents to rub together now had $500 in their pocket, and what they were doing was giving it away to somebody else.
Mm.
And that just wasn't the story that the world tells us, right?
Yeah.
That's a distinct story of grace and generosity. And I just felt like people are so hungry to see the good news in operation. They're hungry for those stories. So for journalists around the country and for people who just started calling me or writing me or going on our website, As I listened to what was compelling about them, I felt like they're hungry for the good news, and they are all aware at some level that somebody has done something crazy wonderful for them, too. You know, many of them, when we started talking on the phone, they recalled these stories of a teacher whose extra generosity with their time had been the game changer in their life.
Yeah.
You know, and here they are in their own lives, and they feel stretched and pinched for time and all this other stuff. And somehow just hearing this story of freedom opened them up and was an echo to these other stories. You know, grandmothers who had prayed over them, you know, constantly,
yeah.
and people who had just invested in them. And I think they remembered the wonder of that. And I think that was also a huge lesson to me. They were recalling echoes of generosity in their own life.
And there is this general concept that, well, the church is always asking for money. And then and we do. But at the same time, and in fact, I sometimes have wondered, you know, what if here in the States, what if our giving wasn't tax deductible? Would we still give?
Yeah,
you know, those sorts of questions. But as a result of your congregation individually receiving this, there probably was some emotional struggles about people's own needs that came in.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it seemed to release, from what I'm reading in your book, a lot of creativity as to what to do. Now, tell us about this hugger guy. Well, the guy went around giving hugs and did...
Oh, yes, the hugger guy, right. Yes, I missed that word. Right, David. David is a guy who is one of those free hug guys. He has a shirt that says free hugs, and he stands outside of sporting events and at the mall and kind of all sorts of places around town offering free hugs.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's part of a whole army of free huggers that are out
right
there. And he is creative. I mean, he has got his own little business now. And it's kind of powerful to have David Millions, a 23-year-old college student, who's kind of doing it, just living generously in the world. You know, can I tell you a few other stories?
Sure, please.
Some of what made the book, which made the book, and others, we just had too many, you know.
Yes.
And it speaks to the freedom. You know, one of the more powerful stories I heard about was the homeless guy, Steve Martin, who passed away a few months ago, so he didn't get to see his name in print. But for about 8 years, he lived under a viaduct in Lincoln Park, a big
mm-hmm.
park right here in Chicago. And when he got his $500 check, he had to endorse it back to the church. We had to give it back to him in cash, you know, because some of
right.
the guys did not have checking accounts. But he rounded up all of his old friends from the viaduct.
Mm-hmm.
And he took them out to what he called a real restaurant meal and the movie.
Yeah.
And it was like him and 10, 11 guys. And I had to take this little footage with my phone, because hearing him talk about what it felt like for him to round up his pals, go to the movies, go to a real restaurant meal, and he says it in the video. He said, for that whole day, we just felt like regular guys.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you know, Steve Martin could have done a lot of stuff with that money. He had
sure.
only recently been moved into the YMCA, into the housing program there. So he had a lot of things. He could have gotten a little toaster oven and a coffee pot and a whole
yeah.
bunch of other stuff that he needed.
Mm-hmm.
And yet where he found his joy was to round up his old friends, you know?
Yeah.
And I think about, and can I tell you a couple other creative
Please,
ways?
Please, yes, yes.
Because, again, some of them, it speaks to the wide variety of lived experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Because some people were super savvy. We have an engineer who's also a patent attorney in church here. And he got really sophisticated. He and his wife pooled their money, so they had $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Then he called up all of his family members, and they could all match that $1,000.
Wow.
Then he went to the foundation of some engineering foundation. He got them to match what all these folks had put together.
Ah.
And then he went to the civic club that he's a member of, and now he's got a significant scholarship that offers a particular stipend every year to a graduating senior of a Chicago public high school who's interested in studying engineering in college.
Wow. That's fantastic.
So, yeah, that's pretty cool, right? Pretty sophisticated.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of other guys. Jim, a guy in our church who works with Hyatt Hotels in their food department, or in their food division, he did something similar. Because, again, he comes from some means, you know?
So right.
He was able to, leverage that generous deed with a number of friends, and they started a little food market over in the west side of town that had been a food desert that's still going on. It's a program that had legs to it.
Hmm.
Yeah, so we had some savvy things like that, and then we had Rosemary, who lives next door to a woman who had lost her 17-year-old son to violence in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And she used her $500 to pay for that kid's funeral.
My goodness.
You know?
And you also told, I forget which character it was, but, you know, he went and he found this a daycare center. And he knocks on the door and says, do you know anybody that could use $20? And
That's right. He
was sort of rebuffed at first.
He was, yep, Dan. He went to these doors, door after door, finally got onto that door. And it ended up being this powerful encounter with this woman who had been praying about her own circumstances in life.
Mm-hmm.
She was a woman who takes in a couple of extra kids and does daycare out of her living room. And she very shyly asked if he thought it would be okay if she used that money for, I think it was her light bill or one of her utility bills. And he said, I think that'd be just fine.
Yeah,
I think that'd be fine. And you know, Dwight, that makes me think of another story that couldn't make it into the book. We just had too many. But it's a senior who lives across the street from the church in subsidized housing. She was a woman who had been a seamstress her whole life, came up from Mississippi back in the 40s in that big, you know, migratory sweep. And her niece was the first person in her entire family, her entire extended family, that was going to college in a two-year nursing program, and she came into my office and sat down and asked me to pray with her to see if the Lord might see fit for her to give her $500 to her niece, who had a little bit of a differential for her books. And, I still kind of get choked up, you know, thinking about these stories of these people who wanted to be in community, who wanted to support these dear people in their lives, and who could feel the goodness, the lovely extravagance of giving, you know?
Mm. As I read the book, I had to think about my own life. And sure enough, there was a time about 15 years ago when I was between careers. And a lot of people in my local church knew it. And, you know, for a couple of weekends, I couldn't shake hands with somebody without them leaving a $20 bill in my hand. And one man finally said, don't know if you can do it, but take your kids to Disney World. And he gave me $250. And it was just totally unexpected and raised our spirits until we got reasonably back on our feet again. But this sense of personal generosity and caring from unexpected sources, frankly, is an amazing positive thing. How has this whole experience now, you've got a couple, 3 years now, affected your congregation?
Well, I'll tell you, it feels like, again, back to this research, when people, part of generosity is feeling like you have something of value to give in the first place. And that's how my congregation feels. They feel, every single one of them, I would say, feels like, and knows, actually, they have something of value to give. So when I ask for volunteers to tutor at the local elementary school, we won't get one or two. We'll get a dozen.
Huh.
And when I put out the call, there were, at the end of last year, there were a number of refugees coming through Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And we heard the stories of several of them. And when I just put out, look, guys, I know it's the end of the year, and we've always got to push, like every church. Everybody has to push in December to make their year-end budget, you know.
Yeah.
And we were no exception. This was last year. But I said, look, there's a family of four coming in. They're all single women coming in from Egypt. Is it possible that we can be their sponsoring, agency? And we got 20,000. And in weeks, we got 20,000. which we're a small church. You know, we're not a mega church. We're still 300-ish people.
Yes.
And that meant something to raise that kind of funds in the month of December. Means a lot. It means people were digging deep. It means some families got together and huddled up and talked about what does it mean to celebrate Christmas this
right.
year, you know? So I feel like it's changed our life. It really has. And maybe giving was always part of our DNA a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But we feel like we've lived the Bible story. We lived the widow's mite. We lived those parables of the coin or the pearl of great price in the
right.
field, you know? And I think when you get some of those lived experiences deep in your gut, you know, you become different. You just live differently.
I wanted to mention, as you were talking about the story of David Malia and how he used the first part of his $500 to take people out and just sit
yeah.
You used some words here that I thought were very important. He was trying to get to know them. He
yeah.
heard about their passions. He encouraged them. And all of a sudden, it came to me, this generosity of spirit was more than money. It was time. It was insight, a lot of things.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, I think that says something powerful about generosity. Generosity is as humbled as I am by people like Bill Gates and those folks who are really investing in the world, because that is a humbling, wonderful
yeah.
thing. Generosity really starts right where we're at, right?
Yeah.
It starts with just knowing, just being interested enough to knowing the people right around us. It's the people who we go to church with. It's the kids that our kids go to school with. It's our next door neighbor. It's our colleague at work. It's taking the time to make them part of your life, and that feels very Jesus based to me.
Yes,
you know he didn't start on the worldwide evangelism.
Right,
he started with the people he lived next door to, and you know, the wedding of his friends. And
yes.
That's where it begins for us as well, you know, right there.
Again, the book is Love, Let Go, Radical Generosity for the Real World by Pastor Laura Sumner Truax and Amelia Campbell. Pastor Laura, where can our listeners get a copy of your book?
Oh, thanks for asking. Gratefully, they can get a copy almost anywhere. It's on Amazon. It's on Barnes & Noble. There's some wonderful independent booksellers. Hearts and Minds Books
mm-hmm.
Is selling it, and we are just really grateful and grateful that we get to be part of this story that God's telling in the world.
Pastor Laura, thank you so much for being with us on LifeQuest.
I appreciate it. Thank you for asking me. Thank you for letting me share the story.
Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. This program comes to you from studios in the Meadowglade Church, Battleground, Washington.